Hello, and welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans. I'm David Bailey, and over the past nearly 12 years, this podcast has taken on many forms, from interviews and audio diaries to cultural snapshots and expat reflections. You might notice some different podcast names mentioned along the way, but it's all part of the same journey, one that explores life, people, and stories from this fascinating region I now call home. If you're enjoying the listen, I'd love it if you left a quick review or rating wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps others discover the show. And if something in the episode sparks your interest or curiosity, why not drop me a message? I always enjoy hearing from listeners. I always reply.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pacinovic Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans, the podcast that takes you on a captivating journey into the heart of Bosnia and Herzegovina and the wider Western Balkans. Each episode, we delve into the rich history, vibrant culture, and hidden gems of this beautiful country. Through engaging conversations and personal anecdotes, we aim to bridge the gap between the Balkans and the rest of the world. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired, entertained, and connected.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
You're listening to the Living in Bosnia and Herzegovina podcast.
It's a Saturday. It's the Living in Bosnia and Herzegovina podcast, and actually, we will most probably put this on YouTube. Right, scene setter. Some time ago, I got this contact from this guy that says, "My name is Arch, and I'm in Dayton." And then he said, "Yes, that Dayton." For those that don't know anything about Bosnia and Herzegovina and its link with Dayton, we will find out in just a minute. So I was a guest on Arch's podcast. Arch, by the way, is the other guy on the screen at the moment. It is, at the moment, 20 past three in the afternoon with me. Miserable, chilly. The typical Bosnian spring hasn't even got out of bed yet. So the first question, Arch, in Dayton, Ohio, it's 9:20 in the morning. You're having your first coffee, I take it. What's it like in Dayton today?
You know, it's been, there's a bit of a chill, but spring's definitely here. So you can, we've got some flowers coming up in the backyard, and the rhubarb that we had planted last year is up again. So there's, you know, there's signs of spring, but it's a little chilly.
Right. That's the niceties out of the way. Good. Arch Grieve, I know as much about you from the short chat we had together on your podcast. I have researched you online, and I don't know where to start. So here we go. Arch Grieve, who is he? What is he all about?
Oh man, that's a great question. it might be too early for me to be existential, but I guess I'm a husband, and then I'm a mediator. So I work for the city of Dayton as a mediator, and I manage a grant program actually that has to do with Bosnia and Herzegovina that hopefully we can talk about at some point. You know, I don't know. I have a lot of different interests. I enjoy building things and playing music, bird watching. So it's hard for me to answer that question because it feels like it's always in flux. So I just enjoy learning and doing new things. I guess that's a little bit about me.
For those that are seeing this in video format, and I'll try and get Arch to paint a picture for those who will just be consuming this audio wise, you are sat, as far as I am aware, in a tiny home. Is that right, or is that your cabin office? You've been creating videos about making tiny homes, right down to doing maple syrup. Is it? So this is not a normal office where you are today, is it? Or is it?
No. Well, I mean, so during the pandemic, I was put on temporary emergency leave by the city. And I've always loved tiny houses, so I kind of wanted to do my homage or my version of a tiny house office in my backyard. And so that's where I'm sitting right now. And, you know, some might call it a shed, but it does have heats for the winter. And it's not insulated, so that's why you might call it a shed. But I call it my tiny house office because I love tiny houses. And it was a lot of fun to build it. So much fun that I decided I was going to do another tiny house office down in an Airbnb property that my brother and I own down in Southern Ohio. And we hauled a bunch of lumber and stuff up this giant hill with some friends and put a little kind of hunting cabin together. It's just 8 by 8 foot, but you can camp up there, you know. And I actually went hunting from there last year. So it's a lot of fun, and I enjoy building them, but nothing too complicated or anything like that. So when I say tiny houses, some people get an idea that it's this really nicely put together thing. I'm just kind of building, maybe they should be called relax shacks. I've heard that term before. So that's kind of what I'm building.
I followed the build on YouTube, and I have to say I was quite captivated by it all. It seemed just like, I don't know, this might ring weird for somebody in the United States, but it's like, I got a 21st century buzz of being a frontiersman again. Would you agree with that?
I'm glad you did. That's kind of what I was going for a little bit. So now, and the maple syrup thing, yeah, I forgot. You asked about that, and there are maple trees down on that property as well. And so my grandpa, you know, we actually bought the property from my grandparents. It had been in the family for 30 plus years, and he'd really gotten into making maple syrup the last 10 years or so. So he helped me through that process, and it turned out really great. We actually got quite a bit of maple syrup, and I enjoyed the process for sure.
Not only do you do YouTube, I'm trying to paint this picture of Archgreave, because what you do as a mediator is hugely serious. And is very relevant, especially to a lot of things that happen in the 21st century. I'm not going to insult you at all, but you're not the youngest of guys. Why are you on TikTok as well?
I just like enjoy TikTok. I don't know why. I got into it. Someone told me actually that I should do it to try to promote my YouTube channel. And I thought, okay, I'll give that a shot. And now it's just become whatever I'm interested in. So there's no niche at all to it. But I do enjoy just watching TikTok videos and making content. So.
Is it difficult to make content for a TikTok video channel?
Yes, I think so. Just coming up with ideas that people are going to find entertaining, especially just because of how condensed the format is. You know, you get 60 seconds at most, so... I actually started a work account for mediation, and I'm struggling with content ideas. So it takes a lot.
Well, let's quickly trot on now to being a mediator. First of all, mediation means a lot, doesn't it? I mean, there's, for me, when you say somebody's mediating, I don't know why, but I gravitate to failed marriages, you know, to people that are in that sort of domestic turmoil, as it will. But sure. what is a mediator actually, and what is the scope for people like you who are very professional trained mediators?
A mediation is just simply, you know, a conversation with two or more parties where a neutral party is there to help them try to communicate more effectively. And that's kind of how we view our role is. It's hard to talk about it without acknowledging that there are different styles of mediation. And I practice what's called transformative mediation, but, you know, there's evaluative, there's facilitative, there's some different styles out there. Our style in particular is very non-directive. So what we're actually doing in the room is, you know, a lot of reflecting what people say and summarizing where they're at, checking in with them, helping them maybe answer questions for themselves about the process, you know, and how it's going. So, but we do all types of different cases. I actually manage our divorce and dissolution program. So you're exactly right. A lot of times people will use it to end their marriage. Sometimes though, you know, we have family disputes, family mediations. I do the small claims program. So I go over to court and mediate. So there's really all different types of, mediation out there that, you know, pretty much any kind of dispute you can think of, there's probably somebody that's tried to mediate it.
How did that training, how did that professional life, or the professional life that you have, how did that bring you to the corner of the world where I'm living at the moment?
Well, you know, it's funny, actually. I took a trip to Bosnia-Herzegovina in, I want to say it would have been 2015 or 16. And it was a part of the Dayton Sister Cities trip. They went on a delegation trip there. And on that trip were two people who worked at the mediation center and who still do. One's now my boss, and the other is a good friend and colleague. And I got started by they convinced me, hey, you should really be a volunteer, because we're actually a community mediation center where we train volunteers to do a lot of our mediations. And so I said, okay. So I was a volunteer for about a year or two. And then they actually had a position open up, and I was looking for a career change and thought, this is something I think I'd like to do. So I applied and got it. And I've been mediating now for about 3 years professionally. Really, Bosnia-Herzegovina kind of changed my life and changed the trajectory of my career just because of who I went on a trip there with. So it's pretty cool about that.
What were your preconceptions? Did you have any preconceptions when they said, hey, we're going off to Bosnia-Herzegovina? In other words, did the country really feature in your life in any way at all? I know, yes, about the Dayton Peace Accord, where they brought the warring factions together to stop the awfulness in the area. But what were the preconceptions, and if any, and when you landed here, when you arrived here, how did that match up with the reality that you were faced with?
I'd been a teacher, and I taught about, you know, the conflict and things. And so I didn't really, though, know what life was really like there. So we always like to do our research, everything from Rick Steves to reading books. And there was a good guidebook that I had found. And I guess one thing that was maybe told to me that seemed like it kind of pans out, maybe you'll disagree, I don't know. But they kind of described the country almost as Middle East meets Germany to some extent. And that kind of seems like it resonates. I'm thinking about going to Sarajevo and going to the brewery there. And it seems like you're in a German beer hall and everything. And then you walk across the street and have hookah, you know, at a bar. And so it's all kind of, it seems that's kind of how I describe it to people sometimes. But I didn't know what that experience was either, because I'd never been to either of those places. So that it was, kind of based off of preconceptions I have of other places. But then, you know, there's just so much more to the country, and I love visiting. I've been back now, I think, 4 or 5 times, because of some of the exchange work that I've been doing. So I'm always looking forward to my next trip there and trying to figure out how am I going to get back.
What were the reactions to you from the locals that you met? And I say that because most of the people that I meet, foreigners, the first thing they say, I said, you know, what was it like your first few hours or whatever, the first meeting that you had? And they almost come back with the same answer, slight variations on a theme, but what the are you doing coming here when there's a lot of other places to go?
I definitely got that a lot, yeah. Which I don't understand, because it's such a beautiful country, you know, and the people are amazing. The food is to die for. I love the food there. So that's one thing I don't want, especially given the fact that, you know, it's the cost of so many things is so much cheaper than a lot of other vacation destinations you might go. So you feel like you're getting all this amazing stuff for a steal. So that's one of the things I don't understand that people react to, because I think that the everyone should be going there. I recommend everybody, that should be your next trip. So but I also would get the being from Dayton and, you know, basically having their constitution named after us, then we would go there and I'd say, yeah, hi, I'm Arch. And then they'd inevitably ask, where are you from? And I would say, I'm from Dayton, Ohio in the US. And then they would kind of look at me weird and they would go, Dayton? And I'd say, yep, that Dayton. So, and I kind of got into this habit where I would apologize, because I know that sometimes maybe Dayton, our goal is to kind of, you know, raise the profile of the city of Dayton itself, because there's a lot of people here in Dayton that really are strongly tied to the country. And, we want that connection to be strong, because we're friends, we're sister cities. So, yeah.
You know, when you first came here and mediating, what sort of mediating, or was it just a familiarization visit? So you can take back information to people back in your home city, the sister city, if you will.
Well, I'll be honest. I wasn't actually a mediator yet. I was a teacher at the time. But I was, at the time, I was on the executive committee for the sister city committee. And so got to go on that trip. And really, it was more like familiarization and then trying to figure out what are some, we had some things we wanted to come out of the trip. And, you know, one of those was trying to figure out maybe some strategic partnerships we could make. And I actually ended up starting a student exchange program at the school that I worked at. And so, and part of that was because I said, I really wanted to figure out how am I going to get back here. So taking students seemed like a great way to do that. And so I took students over there 2 times and then partnered with, an organization called Intera Technology Park in Mostar, and they helped manage the BIH side of the exchange and bringing students over here to Dayton. So we did that twice, and then when I got my new job, we applied for a State Department grant through the U.S. Embassy in Sarajevo, and we actually received that. So now I manage this grant program that brings over 18 students and 3 teachers from the country. And this will be the second time we've done that. COVID obviously made it impossible last year, but we're hopeful for September being when we can actually do it the next time.
You're aware as I am, and I am definitely aware of it. The country is still not healed. We're, 26, 27 years or whatever it is now, after they stopped fighting. And there, it seems to me at times that the divisions, rather than getting less or, you know, they're just becoming more and more deeply entrenched. So a two-part question for you now, Arch. One, do you see it like that? And what would you say, in your opinion, is the likelihood of success that we could ever get these three ethnic groups to get on in an acceptable way in the future?
Well, that's a great question. And I, you know, there's part of me that does see it like that. And obviously, I would defer to your expertise as someone who actually lives there. And so, but when I go there, I certainly see it. But what struck me, I guess, was that we have so many tensions here in the United States. They might not necessarily break down along the same lines, but I don't particularly see I don't see it as incredibly worse. In fact, what surprises me sometimes is the extent to which people having gone through that experience and probably not gone through a lot of healing and things like that. That's almost the opposite of what struck me the most. I think though one of the things we're going to try to do is there's a transformative mediation is one thing, but then there's also transformative dialogue where you bring larger groups of people together to have conversations about those types of things. And I'm really looking forward to having discussions like that, particularly with young people, because these are going to be high school students. And, I think that they see the country differently. They see the possibilities differently. And I have hope, I think, that in the young people there, that, many of them obviously didn't live through that. They don't have that experience. And, when I work with them, sure, there is tension, but it's more regular high school tension than it is, breaking down along these ethnic lines. And so I have a lot of faith and hope, I guess, for the future based off of the young people that I get to meet.
When I first arrived here, in full transparency, I was working with NATO in 1998. So that was 2 years after conflict ended. And the narrative at that time was mir y tolerancia, peace and tolerance. And after all these years, I think we got it incredibly wrong. Asking somebody to tolerate each other is one thing. Asking somebody to reconcile with each other is something else. And I as the expert, I'd like your take on this. I actually feel that reconciliation is more important in the grand scheme of things than tolerance, because I can tolerate my neighbor. I just don't have to talk to him. I don't have to look at him. And I can ignore him, which means there's never going to be any healing between us. Whereas reconciliation is a lot more painful. I do appreciate that. Whether it worked in South Africa or not, when you see it, what's happened after the effect. But as an expert, what do you feel is more? Is it reconciliation? Is it being tolerant? Or is it something else that maybe people here haven't even addressed yet?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I guess for me, I was just in, I joined Clubhouse, another social media app recently. And there was someone in that room who was, her name was Jo, and I'm terrible. I cannot remember her last name. I'm going to have to, she went through this experience of having her father killed by an IRA member, and has, basically gone on a crusade since then. She met with them, and had this conversation and reconciliation to the point to where they're friends now, and they speak together and things like that. And that's incredibly hard work, she's actually, the reason I bring her up is that she mentioned that she has done some work in BIH. And what she was surprised at was the lack of kind of that reconciliation infrastructure, I guess. Excuse me. And I was, you know, struck by that because, you know, there are, I think there is a problem, for example, with schooling, you know, when you have separate schools. And I've been inspired, though, by looking at some youth who are, and I cannot remember where, you would probably know, but places where youth are standing up and saying, we don't want segregated schooling, for example. We want
the city of Yaitza has,
yes.
That was the first one where the kids stood up against the adults and against the system and said, enough is enough. We're going to do this together. And I think they won that argument against the adults.
Yeah, and that's hugely inspiring to me. So that's why, I guess, you know, that younger generation in me gives me some hope that there are things like that. But I do think that there's an infrastructure that's needed for reconciliation and has to be. That's unfortunately something I don't think and as enough people are talking about is what kinds of intentional kinds of things that we're going to do to try to bring that about, you know? And so I don't know what the solution is, but I do see that as maybe part of the problem.
When you're taking these groups of students across the pond to the United States, to Ohio there, are they from one ethnic group, or do you consciously make sure you've got a nice mix to take with you to work with?
Right. No, we do definitely. And that's actually this. I mean, that's one of the stated goals that the State Department has, is to try to, build interethnic cooperation. So they're very explicitly choosing students who are, from different backgrounds. And they even want us, you know, to the point of, you know, we don't, when we assign rooms, we don't do that based off of, you know, your ethnic group. We're in fact trying to mix people up so that you meet people in the country that you may not have met, you know, just living there. So that is one of the goals that we have for sure.
I remember a colleague of mine from many, many years ago, and I like to see if it happens to you. They were taking officers back to Britain. They were starting to form a singular army at that time, but they were guys that had been in, you know, the three different armies that were fighting at the time. And he said, we went to split the airport before they flew out on a British military aircraft to the United Kingdom. And he said, you know what, they wouldn't sit together. And then we put them on the aircraft, and they just on this transport aircraft, and they would not talk to each other. And then when we landed for refuel, all of a sudden he said, I realized that they were offering each other cigarettes, they were buying each other coffee, they were having, you know, they were really getting on. And then, you know, his fear of having this tension during the training that they had in Britain, he said it was nothing. It was just like fantastic. It exceeded all his expectations. He said, on the way back, David, we refueled, it was great. Then as we banked over the Croatian coast to land, they went straight back as they were. When we landed, they wouldn't look at each other, talk to each other, or whatever. And he said, and that really caused him a lot of disappointment. I take it that when these kids arrive in land in Dayton, first of all, it's, yippee, we're in the United States, we're going to do a McDonald's, we're going to do all the things that Balkan kids don't do. Do they get on? And then when you see them go back, that they sort of like get back into the little snail shells again?
You know, I think they do to some extent, but it's, I think, partly just the function of where people live, you know, right? Because that was another one of those things for me that kind of hit home, where, you know, when you travel, you kind of realize what your own hypocrisies are back in your own country. And for me, that was another one of those, because, you know, we're going over there and wanting to promote interethnic dialogue, for example, and yet I live in Dayton, which is one of the most segregated cities still. And, you know, it's 2021 and we're still largely divided by race, you know, in terms of the east side and the west side of the city. And so, you know, it's hard for me to expect more of this other country, particularly having gone through such a traumatic experience, when we're still struggling with some of the very same things. We just call it different things here in the United States. And so I did, though, see a lot of, you know, I think one of the bright spots, I guess, is social media has helped in that regard, you know, because we still keep in touch and, you know, we have a Facebook group where everyone can talk and, you know, that really helps, I think, make up for the fact that people might not see each other in everyday life. But yeah, I have seen that, but it does seem to be less pronounced for the younger students, I guess.
You have this mediation, or you have this project now here in BIH. How are you rolling it out? I mean, is it starting with just small group sessions and capacity building it out? How's it going? Because it seems to me, from my I don't mix with it all the time, but there's less and less and less help coming in for the next generation, the future of this country. A lot of countries actually, I think, have just given up on it. So it's very refreshing, you know, when I bump into somebody like you that says, "Hey, no, I've got this," and you know, we're going to go on with it. I'm thinking, you know, there's energy coming back into the country. So what's the plan for rolling this out from where you've started and where you hope to go, Arch?
Well, you know, there's a part of me that's just, I am a grant manager basically. So I'm just trying to meet all, you know, cross all the T's, dot all the I's of the grant. And it is sponsored, you know, by the U.S. State Department, because they believe in these kinds of programs. But, the goal really is it's a leadership program. And so we want to turn out leaders who are going to be able to go back and impact their communities. And so, I'm really excited. There was a group in Sarajevo that actually started their own TEDx Youth. And so there's now a TEDx Youth in Sarajevo because of the students that came to Dayton. They actually saw a TEDx conference here and they thought, we can do this. We can put it on. And they've done an amazing job. They got the license and everything from TEDx to, you know, hold that program. And you know, they're inspiring new people to tell their stories and share. And so it's hard to predict what it's going to look like, because we just try to equip them with the tools to make change, but we don't tell them what kind of change to make. And so that's kind of the exciting part for me, is seeing what they come up with, really.
Yeah. I think that's really cool. What you've just said is, it's not for me to tell them what to do. I'm just going to guide them. In the early days when I was here, I just used to shudder, especially from the Brits who were saying, you know, what you're doing is absolutely wrong and this is the right way to do it. And I used to think, my goodness, is this the pot calling the kettle black here? Because, you know, of all the huge problems that we have in the United Kingdom, and you're telling them how to do things and we can't even do it ourselves. I thought that was a bit rich. Do you provide them with... I know this is a business phrase, aftercare.
Well, so we do, that's something we could improve for sure, but we do try to follow up with them. And, you know, one of the things that's required by the grant is a reporting period. And, you know, COVID, of course, as it did with everything else, it messed that up too, because we were supposed to go back and I was supposed to be able to travel there, meet with the students and their families and find out what they did and then create the report. But unfortunately, it just turned into a Zoom meeting. And so had everybody, you know, explaining what they had been working on and everything. And a lot of the students' projects, too, have been affected by COVID, because a lot of them wanted to do something, bringing a large groups of people together. And obviously, you can't do that. So so that's really affected the way I would like to provide the kind of aftercare that we should be providing, unfortunately.
When you get back, when you come here again, which I don't know, maybe September. We're having huge problems at the moment. I luckily, can you believe this? I'm a foreigner and I got my vaccine before locals. Not because I'm anybody special, is that where I am in the north of the country, people are more, how would you say, they're looking to the Russian vaccine rather than anybody else's vaccine. Once again, politics and ethnicity playing into a health scenario, if you will. And I had a telephone call and they said, "You're a Brit, right? Yeah. Would you like the British vaccine?" And I went, "It's a no-brainer." Not because it's British, because to me a vaccine is a vaccine, and I'd like to stay healthy very much indeed. So, yeah, whether we get to the point, which I hope we will, that September, people can come back. When you do come back, it can't all be work. There'll be time to socialise. There'll be time for Arch to broaden his already boundaries of what he knows about Bosnia-Herzegovina. So far, in all the times you've been here, favorite two places and why?
Oh, man. This is where I get into trouble. So of course, I am. Now I'm chair of the Sister City Committee now. And our sister city is Sarajevo, but we've been throughout the country. And I will say Sarajevo, I'm glad you gave me two. Thank you. I love going to Sarajevo, especially the old city there. You know, I think it's beautiful. I just love the culture and, you know, just being able to see all the different sites and things. And so that's been a lot of fun. I really, really like the old city of Mostar as well. That's, you know, one of my favorite places to go. There's a little, and I can be really super specific, there's the Karma Cafe that's like right underneath the bridge there. That's kind of my go-to spot whenever I'm in Mostar. I just like to go hang out down there, have drinks, watch the divers, you know, people watch, see all the tourists and everything. Of course, I'm one of them, but, you know, I just enjoy that quite a bit. But, you know, I'm terrible with names. There's so many more different places. You know, I love going to Kravica Waterfall and things like there's just so much natural beauty there in the country that I could go on and on. I won't remember all the names, but that's why I started a travel blog, so that I could remember things where I went.
And favorite food? It's got to be meat. It's got to be meat, right?
Oh, yeah, it is. It's a toss up between cevapcici and burek, probably. I love burek, and that's one of my favorites, but I also love cevap. So I don't know. It's between those two, but so many different ones that I love too. So pretty much anything people put in front of me over there, I love. So
yeah, the cevap is a big thing. As soon as I can get out and about again, which I'm hoping, as I say, will be the end of this month, Tamara and I are going to go out for a day trip. Well, most probably overnight in Sarajevo. But we're going to do a cevap tour in 2 days of Bosnia, which means that I'm trying to get this waistline down, right? But I mean, obviously I'm going to explode again. Because every city, every large town has its own twist on the cevap. And I don't think people actually within the country appreciate too much about how many twists. Obviously, Sarajevo has its cevapcici. Travnik has its famous one where it's soaked in broth. And Banja Luka is the home of the Banja Lučka cevap, which is the four fingers into a pate of its own. But there are other distinct differences, and we're going to try and find these. But the good news is, for people listening and people watching, is if you are of a vegan or vegetarian persuasion, all is not lost. The country is actually starting to embrace it. It's not a big percentage, but I think in every city now you can actually find somewhere which is not meat. Because as you will know, you go to a restaurant, "Would you like some meat, sir?" "Yeah." "Would you like a portion of meat as a side order of that?" "Yeah." "And would you like some more meat with the meat?" I mean, for non-meat eaters, this could be a bit of a nightmare visit, couldn't it?
Oh, yeah. The big things I warned, you know, when I was taking students over there, I told them all, you know, just be aware, it is a meat-eating country. If you're a vegetarian, it's, you know, like you said, you'll be able to find things. But But the expectation is you're going to eat meat, so you'll have to let people know that.
Now, when you come back, hopefully at the end of this year, you've got to put 7 days on top, Arch. You've got to put 7 days on top, because I need to get my hands on you, and I've got to give you the local, the real away from it all tour of Bosnia, where you can actually drink fruit, because as you know, they don't eat fruit here. They distill it into alcohol. So you've got a lot to look forward to, my dear chap.
I appreciate that. I love any opportunity to drink fruit.
Well, Tamara and I said, well, when Arch comes back, if he comes back at the right time of the year, then he should come with us, and you and I can help the locals distill this alcohol down. It's quite the experience. I don't think you're allowed to do moonshine in the States, are you? We're certainly not allowed to do it in the United Kingdom. That was banned hundreds of years ago. But out in the boonies, is that what you call it? Out in the boonies here, every family's doing it, mate.
Yeah, that's something I have never experienced, that seeing people do that. So I would love to do that. I do, thankfully. That's one of the benefits of doing the exchange program, is I've made a lot of good friends over there. And so I do have a nice bottle of moonshine, Rakia, here in my little tiny house. So I haven't run out yet. So I keep well stocked.
Arch, finally, as we bring this to an end, what are the plans for Arch professionally? And if you don't mind sharing privately, for this, our second year at the moment of such an unusual life?
Well, professionally, you know, we're really hoping the students are in September. And so I'm doing everything right now I can. We're also be able to start at the mediation center some to do some actually other a show with our local public acts that we can put on YouTube to try to help educate people. And I'm kind of working on that committee that's responsible for putting that together. So I'm also personally really excited. I might, thankfully, or thanks in part to being on the sister city committee, one of our other sister cities is Monrovia, Liberia, and might actually have the opportunity to travel there later this year. So really looking forward to that. I've never been to Africa before, and so that would be the first time, and always eager to have an opportunity to visit a new continent. So so I'm looking forward to that possibility. I've got my vaccine, I heard a story the other day that I think searches to Disney World were up 2,600%. So people are thinking about traveling again, and I'm excited for that. So whatever it looks like, it's probably going to involve some form of traveling.
Well, we certainly hope that we're going to meet up. I'm certainly hoping that we'll get a coffee or a beer or whatever. And I'm really excited to sit down and just chew the fat about a huge number of things. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Arch Grieve. He's in Dayton, Ohio, works for he's a mediator. If you want to find out more about Arch, I'm going to have links in the description to this video online. It will be in the show notes to the podcast. I'm also going to give him some shameless promotion as well. You can see how he makes his tiny house. You can see how they do the maple syrup. And if I can find him on TikTok, I'll give you that. And if you really want to find out something interesting in life, please do subscribe to him. You will not be disappointed at all. Arch, thank you very much for giving me your time on the weekend. I hope you have a very safe weekend, and I'll catch you again very, very soon.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been great talking to you, and I love watching all of your videos and getting your newsletters and stuff. So thanks for all you do to, just raise the profile of the country and help it connect with new audiences, so I appreciate it. I just cannot escape from Balkan.
escape from Balkan. 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 No escape from Balkan. 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 No escape from Balkan. 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 No escape from.
And that's a wrap for this podcast. We hope you've enjoyed finding out a little more about both Bosnia and Herzegovina and the wider Western Balkans. If you've enjoyed this journey as much as we enjoy bringing it to you, please take a moment to leave us a review and subscribe to our podcast. Your feedback helps us tremendously and makes a huge difference. Thank you once again for joining us, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pacinovic-Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans. So that's it for this one. Thanks for keeping me company. If you enjoyed the episode, maybe share it with a friend who might like it too. And if you've got thoughts, questions, or just want to say hello, you can always reach out. Also, if you'd like to support the podcast and help me keep telling these stories, you can drop a little tip via Buy Me a Coffee. The link is in the show notes. Even a euro or two makes a big difference. So that's it then. Take care, and I'll catch you in the next episode.